very helpful nonetheless. And we're going to take some time for Q&A. So think about questions you might want to ask Mike. I'll bring the microphone around and ask your question, and we'll get the recording of both the question and the answer. And while you're thinking of that, we're going to take a free will offering for those who wish to support the ministry here. You know, you realize from Mike, too, getting the word out is what we need to be all about as apologists. And I particularly like Mike's verse from 2 Timothy, because, you know, all that you've heard from Mike and from others here, we need to share that with others. We need to get the word out. So if you have a question, put your hand up. I'll come around with the microphone.
This is going to be a great question about my grandchildren, isn't it?
No.
No, okay.
Okay, so I recently had a discussion with an unbeliever, and we were discussing just creationist views versus evolutionist views, and one of the questions that he asked me was basically, how do you believe certain things in science without believing others? And his whole thing was, I'm studying nursing, and it's very based in biology and chemistry and everything. And he was saying, why do you believe some of the things that that these famous scientists, you know, realized or discovered, but not these other things? How would you go about answering a question like that?
They answered you that question?
Yeah.
That was the question they asked you. How can you believe some science and others?
Yeah.
I would ask, for instance, give me an example of what science we do not believe in. In other words, clarify the question. That's a very broad statement, and you could shoot yourself in the foot. I would say, give me an example of what kind of science, as creationists, we do not believe. Because we do believe in science. We actually are the ones that believe in the laws of science. I would ask them, why do you not accept the law of biogenesis, which says life only comes from prior life? In other words, I would turn it around on them. But make sure they clarify. Give me one instance of a science we do not accept. If it's evolution, then they got a problem because they're equating evolution with science. And then you can go to work on the, can you tell me where life came from without asking me to believe by faith? Give me any observational evidence. So keep it short and simple. You don't have to elaborate. And see, this is where we get ourselves in trouble a lot of times. They ask these big elaborate questions, and they're loaded questions. And we need to analyze their words and turn it right around on them, being a little more specific. That's how I would answer that one. Hope that satisfies you there. If it doesn't, we can talk some more. But that's what I would do. Call them on their statement.
Other questions people may have?
I got lots of questions. If I can't answer mine, they have to do push-ups.
While you're thinking of your question, I'll give another example that I've talked to a lot of different skeptics, and I talked to them about evidence for the evolution of human beings. I said, give me one example of a fossil that proves that evolution of human beings happened. Well, he says, go to the museums, there's fossils all over. No, I said, give me one example that gives you the evidence, and of course they can't. So it's very important that you get the question right.
Yes.
Because otherwise you won't get the answer either.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up, we still have some room for the class tomorrow. It's 8:30 to 5:30. We'll take a break every hour because you'll need it. And it's $45 for adults, $25 for teens, and we feed you lunch and snacks. At the end of the day, all you think you have done is eat and taking breaks.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for a brief introduction to your ministry. I just want to ask, I've read a lot of books about, I've read Answers of Genesis and ICR as well, and every time we speak to non-believers or the evolutionary thinking people, always the carbon dating question always somehow creeps in. Now, there is a lot of books and a lot of books and articles about on Answers in Genesis and ICR about carbon dating. Is there a short version that you could say in few words we can explain their answers or give them a good answer about this carbon dating problem they always bring up? Thank you.
Okay, we'll keep it really short because I'm one of the ones that's written some of those things too. Let's keep it real short. Carbon 14 tends to come up quite a bit. Can I give a little background first so you have something to base what I'm going to say on? Carbon 14 is an atom. It's an isotope. We have different kinds of carbon, carbon 12, 13, 14. Now, carbon 14 is not natural to our atmosphere. It gets produced in the atmosphere. How does that happen? Well, we have these things coming down from outer space. I'm not talking UFOs. That's a whole other talk. It's called cosmic rays, highly energized particles, bombard our upper atmosphere. Now, the two main gases in our atmosphere are what? Oxygen and nitrogen. Very good. See, we have chemists here. And these cosmic rays come down, bombard the upper atmosphere, tremendous force and intensity. And the end result is some of the nitrogen atoms get converted or changed into carbon-14 atoms. That's how we get in the atmosphere. Now, carbon gets taken in by plants, and we eat it and we breathe it. And that's how we get carbon-14 in us. So all living things really get carbon-14 in them. Now, I have a question. Anybody want to answer it? What's the question, Mike? That's not how I operate. You got to volunteer first. I'm looking for. Oh, you moved. You moved. That's how you volunteer in the military. Thank you. Right there. I'll take all three. I'll give all three of you a chance. Do rocks eat or breathe? No. See, that was pretty. How many wish you would have volunteered? See how much they understand physics? They're physicists right there. Yeah, rocks don't need to breathe. Therefore, most all rocks will not have carbon-14 in them, so you can't date rocks using carbon-14. Only once living things. So I'm laying a little background there. Now, carbon-14 is unstable. I just said something very interesting there. Carbon-14 is unstable. You have carbon-14 in you, so what does that make you? Unstable. See, now you have a scientific reason for acting the way you do. How many like physics now? This is getting fun, isn't it, physics? Yes. Now, what do we mean by unstable? It is radioactive. It's radioactive. What do we mean? It decays or changes. Now, what does it decay or change into? Back into nitrogen-14. So the full life cycle starts carbon-14. Some of the nitrogen gets changed into carbon-14, and then the carbon-14 changes back into nitrogen over time. Now, the question here is that deals with a lot of this, that helps us understand, is how long does it take that carbon-14 atom to change back into nitrogen? And we estimate that in terms of half-lives, how long it takes half of what's out there to decay, we estimate that to be about 5,730 years. So every 5,730 years, half the carbon-14 in the atmosphere is changed back into nitrogen. Does that mean we're going to run out of carbon-14? No, because it's still being produced by the cosmic rays. Okay. Now, we estimate that after about 80,000 years, well, let me ask you, I got to ask another question. Anybody want to answer another question? Thank you. You volunteered. I saw you move there. Right back there. When we die, do we continue to eat or breathe? No. See, aren't you glad you volunteered for that? Yes. Yeah, once we're dead, we no longer eat or breathe. That means once we're dead, we're no longer taking carbon-14 into our body, are we? But the carbon-14 that's in us continues to decay out. And we estimate after about 80,000 years, all the datable carbon-14 is gone. There's still a little residue left, but we can't do anything with it. So it's so small. But after about 80,000 years, that would be the maximum dating range for carbon-14, about 80,000 years. And remember, you can only date once living things. So now, let's take apart the whole geologic column, show you why the carbon-14 is our friend and an enemy of the evolutionist. We have this big geologic column with all these fossils in there. And they date this geologic column by put it into different eras and different zones there. And if we were to find a fossil, let's put it this way. If we were to find a fossil and still had carbon-14 in it, what could you assume? It's younger than 80,000 years, wouldn't you? If you were to find a fossil and had no carbon-14 in it, what would you assume? Older than 80,000 years. Okay? Space, as creationists and evolutionists, we accept that. So if we were to find a fossil in the sediments that have been dated 500 million years old, now these sediments dated 500 million years old, We found a fossil in there. Should it contain any carbon-14? No, absolutely not. If we were to find a fossil in the sediments that they dated maybe 150 million years old, should it contain any carbon-14? No. How about if we find a fossil in sediments that were 2 million years old, should it contain any carbon-14? No. Okay, let's talk about coal. Coal is organic, comes from organic material. According to evolutionists, coal is tens to hundreds of millions of years old. Should it contain any carbon-14? No. Well, a group of research scientists from the Institute for Creation Research a while ago took coal samples from around the country, took them to the evolutionist lab so there'd be no bias here, and said, tell us what you find in this coal. Guess what they found in every coal sample? Carbon-14. What does that tell us? That coal and where we found that coal cannot be millions of years old, but only thousands. This group didn't stop there. Now, diamonds are a very special kind of stone. Anybody remember watching the Superman movies where he takes a lump of coal and squeezes it and turns it into a diamond? Anybody remember that? I don't want to mess things up for you. That's not how diamonds are made, folks. The whole Superman thing was wrong. Diamonds are not made that way. Doesn't that just ruin everything? See, diamonds are pure carbon. All they are is pure carbon. Now, diamonds, according to evolutionists, are hundreds of millions to billions of years old. Should they contain any carbon-14? Now, diamonds are, again, a very special kind of stone because they're just all carbon. So there should be no carbon-14 in there. Well, guess what this group of scientists did? Took diamond samples, took them to the evolutionist lab, and guess what the evolutionists found in the diamonds? Carbon-14. What does that tell you about the diamonds? They're not that old. Doesn't stop there. When did the dinosaurs die out, according to evolutionists? 65 million years ago. Should their bones contain any carbon-14? No. Guess where we're finding almost all the dinosaur bones? Carbon-14. Even the evolutionists are finding that. Carbon-14. And we've ruled out contamination. So what does that tell you about carbon-14? Things can't be millions of years old, can they? Only thousands. And that's how I usually go through that. We don't have to go into all the how the dating is actually done. But where we're finding it is powerful evidence that this Earth is not that old. Thank you for asking that.
So that was your short answer?
Yes. Well, you had to build a foundation.
Okay. And the other thing that we should add to that, the fact that they're finding red tissue in dinosaur fossils.
Salt tissue, proteins, red blood cells. Those come apart rather rapidly, but they're finding a lot of dinosaur bones now.
Yeah. Okay, other questions?
Right up here.
Oh, sorry.
In your 3 years of that college, having it in August, how quickly or what's the average of how soon does one have to get their application in to make that class of 60?
I'd say make sure you get in at least 2 months before you go.
2 months.
Because you have to make your plane tickets and things.
That indicates there's great interest in this.
Yes.
For people and to me. That's a great advertisement.
We don't
right
spend
there.
Any money on advertisement. This is the only way we advertise, and through email. But we're too cheap to spend $2,000 and put it in a magazine.
And as you'll see, you know, Mike is one of the few. I don't think there's any other creation that gives a course like that.
No, not with this level. Incidentally, if you want entertainment, it only happens at night when you're dreaming. And we do invite one extra guest. We have an extra guest speaker that comes. He doesn't talk about what we're talking about. Last couple of years, we had somebody talk about end times and prophecy and Israel. This year, we're going to have a very special guest speaker, Sam Rotman. He is a concert pianist, a Beethoven specialist, and world champion. He was born an Orthodox Jew and was saved at Juilliard. What a testimony this man. And you'll listen to his playing. He's tremendous. Plays with passion.
Okay, other questions you may have? There's going to be lots of time to ask more questions at the tables back there, too. Mike will be around for a while. And, you know, there's a lot of resources which cover some of the topics that Mike has covered here. So one more chance. Any other?
Let me do it. Here's an educational tactic to end a session. If there are no more questions, we're all done. Anybody dare have a question? I know all these educational tactics. Thank you so much for coming out tonight.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mike, for doing